I'm really optimistic and encouraged by what new technology will bring to bear in helping physicians and the care team get to the right diagnosis. And then once that diagnosis is made, ensuring that they're prescribing the right treatment.
Hello and welcome to the Better Care Podcast, where we share the stories and insights of clinicians, healthcare leaders, and innovators who are improving the way clinicians work and deliver care. Today's episode is brought to you from Vive 2025, a digital health conference held in Nashville, Tennessee a few weeks ago. While at the conference, Evidence Care's Chief Medical Officer and co-founder, Dr. Brian Fengler, interviewed four digital health experts in their respective areas. Dr. Aaron Wilcox from Kaiser Permanente, Megan Huffman from Novant Health, Dr. Jordan Messler from Glytech, and Dr. Rich Loomis from Elsevier. These conversations cover helpful digital health strategies for hospitals, specific use cases for AI in clinical care, approaches to reducing clinical burden and burnout, and what areas of healthcare our guests most wish to fix. This episode offers listeners a front row seat of some of the most innovative ways healthcare and technology are converging, so we hope you enjoy it and thank you for listening.
Well, Aaron, thanks for joining me today on the Better Care Podcast. Aaron Wilcox is a general surgeon and a technologist involved in innovation with Kaiser. So what'd you come to Vive for? What have you been looking for while you're here?
Yeah, so I come to Vive for a lot of reasons. You know, I come to meet people and talk about new ideas. We always think about what we can build for the future. And so here to validate ideas and look for partners and see what's next for our patients.
Nice. So I'm not going to allow you to say AI, but what cool things have you seen over the last few days that maybe something that you weren't aware of that was a new idea that you'd want to bring back to Kaiser?
Yeah, so it's hard not to say AI, you know, just get it out of the way. But I think there's so many things and so many people doing amazing things here. You know, I think that I'm really interested in the care journey space. I think that for a while, the conversation around care journeys was around just kind of like how to bump a patient from one thing to the next thing to the next thing. It was more about forward progress. And I think it's about more now. So, you know, I think that there's some really neat ideas around integrating multiple services, multiple things that a patient may desire along their way to support them in their care journey, but also help them find their best health outside of medicine as well. So, you know, I kind of like some of the wellness stuff that's coming in into the frame. And I like the idea of integrating multiple solutions into kind of one experience, which I just hadn't seen as much in the past.
So you and I just met a few days ago, but I really enjoyed getting to know you. And one of the things you shared with me the other night was, you know, you trained in Ohio, but now you've been, you know, with Kaiser 15 plus years. And just, you know, how practicing that environment has kind of brought joy to the practice of medicine, allowing you to like really focus on patient care. We'd love to have you share a little more about, you know, your experience with that.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, people ask how I ended up in the technology space or the digital health space. Kind of a fun story. I mean, it started honestly at like a coffee station, you know, like asked a simple question about why when I order X, it doesn't happen. Like, why? How could this be the case? And instead of getting an answer, instead of somebody fixing a problem, I got a meeting invite, and the meeting invite had the nurse leaders, you know, for this particular unit, happened to be the post-anesthesia care unit, but it also had the informatics team. And so it was like my first foray into understanding that data can transform patient experiences. In this case, like the cost of the experience for the patient was an extra night's stay. Like some of these patients were not getting discharged as quickly as they could. So you start to see like, okay, like this is happening, you know, 10 or 12 times a month. These 10 or 12 patients a month, you know, get home and you kind of like, I got a taste for like scaling my influence. And so we fixed this problem. And then like people realized I was a nice guy and had a knack for conversation and, you know, was willing to put in the hard work. And so small problems became medium problems, became big problems, became massive scale problems. So yeah, the problems we fix now impact, you know, the 330,000 patients that get elective operations in our system in Southern California every year. And the millions of people that touch our surgical departments. So been a slippery slope. It's been a lot of fun, but you know, the balance between my very intimate clinical practice as a surgeon, you know, balanced with kind of the broader, maybe less deep, but very wide impact has been just really satisfying for me.
Yeah. If you're able to, you know, any initiatives that you've done recently that you've been really proud of and that really, you know, brought a lot of great change and better patient care.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that we're really excited about and we continue to learn the impact is around perioperative preparation for surgery. So we have a program that's for lower risk patients undergoing lower risk operations. They can have a digital experience in lieu of a traditional pre-op visit. Yeah, we learned a lot along the way. You know, initially the learning was like, okay, you pull away a pre-op visit, but a lot of things happen. There are patients sign consents, they get their meds, they learn how to prepare for surgery, when to stop eating, et cetera. And so the feedback was like, this is untenable. We can't just remove that appointment. So with that feedback, we built a digital solution that supports a patient. So, you know, look for breadcrumbs in the EHR. We find contextual information about where they are in their journey. We give patients just-in-time, bite-size information in ways that they want and they can look at again. But what we're most proud of is, you know, we're liberating these appointments for other needs. So we're finding it's easier for departments to see their consultations, easier for our surgical departments to do minor surgeries because we're liberating this for other places. And the other really exciting thing is these patients are 60% less likely to have unnecessary labs or x-rays or EKGs in preparation for surgery. And for us, that's at scale, that's translated to, you know, tens of millions of dollars in savings. So it's been fun to watch. And we continue to grow the program.
Yeah. It starts off with those uncomfortable conversations with people saying, like, there's no way we can do this. Like, I have to see the patients before they have surgery. I have to talk to them about all this. And, you know, getting down that path of saying, okay, well, what does that mean? What do we want to do? What do we want them to prepare for? And just, yeah, and doing it at scale.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, what's funny is, you know, one of the early feedback was like, our patients want this. And it's like, well, do they want it? Like, we asked patients, do you want this? And, you know, it turns out a lot don't. And then some of the feedback is like, well, this is great for young patients, but what about the older patients? And it turns out like 30% of the patients enrolled right now are enrolled in Medicare. Like, they love it too. Yeah, the what's in it for me is always there. We've studied this pretty extensively, even like time motion studies. So in our general surgery and orthopedics office, this saves our back office members about 9 minutes a patient. That's what they were spending just reading a canned spiel. So yeah, it's been very successful for us. And we've used kind of the template to start thinking about different ideas.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you could wave a magic wand to save one hospital, operational, or patient care issue, what would that be?
Yeah, so that's an easy one for me. It's around scheduling. So especially scheduling for surgery, it continues to be a challenge. It's a very human-driven process. There's so many things at play. We're talking venue. We're talking about the right equipment, the right implantables, the right reps, the right amount of time, the right assistant. There's just so many things at play that it's still a human-driven experience, and it's frustrating for patients, to be frank. So the blue sky vision would be that you could schedule surgery like you can schedule flights. And not only can you schedule like that, but you have an itinerary that helps you understand what to expect. And not only do you have an itinerary, but if your plans change, you know, your grandkid is getting married or something, it's easy to cancel and reschedule. Like, each of these things sometimes feels like starting over. So yeah, this is a problem we're going to solve. Like, our team has a vision to solve this, but it's a tough nut to crack.
Yeah, it's awesome. Do you know anything else that you want to highlight before we close up that you've seen that was interesting?
No, you know, I think there's a convergence of medicine, of technology and creativity here that you don't see at all medical venues. Like, you know, the scientific conferences are great. They're great for quality. Talk less about value and certainly talk less about what patients actually desire. So yeah, my plug is like, let's find creative solutions for hard problems. So let's keep the patients in mind. Let's certainly keep the clinicians in mind. Let's make everybody's life easier. And let's just continue to accelerate our solving of difficult problems.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Aaron, thank you for coming on with me. I know your schedule is very busy with the conference, but appreciate you hopping on for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, Megan, thank you for joining me. With me today, I have Megan Huffman, VP of Digital Health from Novant, great health system in North Carolina. We are here at the Vive conference. So why'd you come to Vive this year?
A couple reasons. One, being the leader of digital health, it's important that I know what's going on in the industry and I know what's going on in the market. It is our responsibility to serve up solutions to maybe problems or opportunities that we're facing in our health system. And so my team needs to be well educated and familiar with what's happening, and then also learning from other health systems and networking, as you know, in this industry, especially in digital health, is everything. And having someone to call and pick up the phone to say, hey, have you tried this? Have you done this? That's a huge piece of this. And so partly the networking, making sure my team has people to call, seeing what's out there. And then also specifically, we know that the future is having either smart hospitals or digitally enabled rooms, whatever fun buzzword that you want to put there. But we know that's where we have to go. And so spending a lot of this time making sure that we're talking to those partners that are out there and vendors to see what they've got. And does that meet some of the items that we're looking for when we think about requirements and how we want to serve our patients?
Yeah. So from a digital health perspective, what are some of the top initiatives at Novant right now?
So we have a lot of things going on. I'm super excited. I've been at Novant for about 2 years. I was at HCA here in Nashville, so it's kind of fun for 8 years before that to be back in town. But the best part is that I'm home in Charlotte, relatively. So I get to serve a population that I grew up in. My family is still there. And so one of the big things that we have to think about, and especially North and South Carolina, is we have a big rural population. And kind of my why, even getting into this space, even though it kind of fell into my lap, but why I'm so passionate about it, is that I grew up in a county that didn't have a hospital. And so if you needed to go to the hospital, there's two counties that you had to get to, and that could be a 30-minute drive. And then when you get there, if anything relatively serious is going on, you have to go to Winston or Charlotte. And so that's kind of the model that I've been used to my entire life. And so thinking about serving that, it's a lot of steps in the process. And so being able to figure out how do we get to communities to where we don't expect people to have to drive 30 minutes and then either get airlifted or sent by a truck, right? Another hour. That's hard. It's hard on family. It's hard on the patients. People have to work, you know, and that's a lot going on. And so we're really trying to figure out how do we create an experience using digital tools when and where it makes sense. At no point would I ever speak from a clinical perspective. I always make sure we've got physicians at the table that are saying what is appropriate to do digitally, but making sure we have that as an option to serve up. I was talking to my grandparents last week, and I was at their house and visiting, and they were talking about how like their week is going to be spent driving back and forth to Winston for follow-up visits. You know, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is a perfect opportunity. Like, they know how to use an iPhone. Like, we can figure this out. Again, one of the big strategies at Novant is how do we make sure we're serving our patients where they're at and meeting them where they're at? And a part of that is going to be through a digital means. So that's a piece of it. Also making sure that we're looking at our populations across the care continuum of how do we meet patients that need remote patient monitoring and being smart, not doing it for the sake of doing it, right? But like saying, hey, here's a real problem that we're trying to solve for our patients. And this is the appropriate digital solution. And how do we mix that seamlessly with in-care? Because at no point is it going to be one or the other, right? There's going to be some mixture. And I think that it's a symphony, right? And everybody's got to play the right part, and it's got to all come together and sound really good for that patient to have a seamless experience. And so we're focused and committed to kind of mixing innovation. We've got a great patient experience leader, technology in our clinical team, and kind of finding that secret sauce to serve up to our patients. So yeah.
It's amazing. So obviously, big buzzword at Vive this year and last few years has been AI. But what other kinds of, you know, use cases and how folks are using AI in a particular niche or particular theme have you seen this year that, you know, have really got you interested?
Yeah, it has been a buzzword. Everyone's talking about it. And I think it's been interesting, too, that, you know, digital health is a relatively ambiguous word in and of itself. And so I get pinged a lot of like, hey, what's going on, AI? But Novant is taking that really seriously. And so we have a new transformation EVP, and our AI governance sits with under him. And so we've got a great leader. She's cognitive computing, and she's leading up our AI governance. And so essentially anything that has some sort of AI capability currently or that we're looking at goes through this governance process. We're being very intentional about what AI we're bringing into the system and what we're doing with it. And so I most certainly wouldn't be an expert on all things AI, but I think that especially from my perspective, we have a team that does on-demand virtual care 24/7. And there's some components of that that I think we could be using some AI technology to start to tee up to patients when they come on to say, you know, I have a cough, right? And we can start to ask, I think, some smart questions and then be able to use AI technology when our providers get on to say, oh, Brian, I saw that, you know, you had an appointment last week with your cardiologist, you know, kind of having some of that information teed up, I think will make us a lot more efficient. So that's exciting. We're piloting DAX Copilot as well. And so that's something fun we're looking at. I think in the radiology space, there's always, you know, kind of been the application. So we partner with Viz and ADOC as well. And that's a really fun space. We think about telestroke. So that's one of our main services that we offer. Having Viz as a part or Rapid or any of those AI capabilities as part of the process, they're able to really detect LVOs so much quicker. And so we're able to get patients where they need to be very fast. And so I love just watching that process like get shrunk and using technology where it's supposed to be. And, you know, I use AI all the time too, right? It's like, it's almost a personal assistant. You know, if I'm not starting anymore from a white piece of paper, right? AI can at least start to tee those things up so I can edit it. And so I think we have to be open-minded of using AI when and where it makes sense.
In a previous conversation, you'd mentioned that you guys are starting to kind of look at smart rooms. What's the value proposition of smart rooms? Why should health systems, you know, be looking into smart rooms?
Yeah, great question. I think technology is a tricky one sometimes when you're looking at ROI, and there's some squishy stuff that comes along with that. And so one thing I'll try to be very real with our e-team about is that it may be technology for the sake of the fact that we have to have the technology, right? And that's kind of where electronic medical records came along, or even like TVs in rooms. There's not an ROI that there's a TV in a room. Right. But it also, you have to have it. Like, this is where we're at, an expectation that patients have. And so I don't believe that that is, it's technology for the sake of technology by any means. But I also don't like to have, I was a consultant for a while. So I'm all about, you know, not over promising and under delivering by any stretch. And so I just said it could be that. But here are the ROI metrics that we're looking for. And thinking about digitally enabled rooms as a large scale solution, not solving for one thing. So we're not doing this just for virtual nursing or just for sitters, right? It has to be an all encompassing look at this. And that's where you start to see a lot more of the ROI for the technology, because otherwise I would never be able to do it just for virtual nursing. The math is not going to math on that. But when you start to add on some other capabilities and think about patient experience, can you bring visitors into the room, right? So people don't have to leave work, but they can hear what the hospitalist is saying. When you think about from a nursing perspective, giving nurses the opportunity to do their job virtually and not on their feet all day, there's some retention there. And so those are going to be some tricky metrics, I think, to track, but we're committed to doing that as we're on this journey. And we've got an amazing foundation at Novant Health that loves to help us get started in some of these initiatives. And so we're hopeful that, that'll kind of work out to get us a kickstart so I can really, my team and I can really look at some of these metrics of like baseline, where we're going, and then are we getting what we think we're going to get out of this?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, last question. So if you could wave a magic wand and fix one thing in either hospital operations or patient care, what would that be?
Wow, that's a big one. Maybe it's a risky thing to say, but I think it's how we pay for healthcare. You know, I think that is a big challenge. You know, we had this activity on Sunday. I don't even know how I got invited to this, but we were at a recording studio and we got broken into two teams, and these two songwriters, we all wrote down a bunch of words, healthcare buzzwords, right? And we're in these two rooms and we're writing a song about it. And so the girl that was helping us, some of the words were value-based care, fee-for-service, right? And she's writing this on the whiteboard to help us. And she's using it in these contexts that doesn't make any sense, because she's not in healthcare. But I'm like, that is so sad because she is a patient. Like, and patients have no idea what a value-based care versus a fee-for-service model is and how we're paying for things. And we have so many brokers between the patient and healthcare, right? You have employers, you have the payers, you have, you know, the federal government, there's all these things. And I think everyone has a place, obviously, but it's so convoluted and it's so tricky. And we're all over here trying to do the math, especially now that it's becoming more diversified, right? It's like, okay, well, if it's a fee-for-service population, here's how we would have to structure it for it to be financially feasible. Okay, if it's a value-based care, here's how it's going to look. We have to be patient because we're not going to see some of that for the next 3 years. We have to look right. It's complicated. So if I could wave the wand, it would be like a very straightforward structure of what I would call kind of the noise. Clinicians should be supported to serve our patients at the end of the day. That's what matters, is getting care to patients. And all this other noise, I think, is just an unfortunate means to the end of how this works. But yeah, that would be the magic wand, because I think that's the tricky part.
That's an amazing answer. That would fix a lot.
Yeah.
Well, Megan, thank you for joining me. I know you're quite busy with the conference, but appreciate you sitting down with us for a few minutes.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.
Jordan, thank you for joining me on the Better Care Podcast. We got Jordan Messler, Chief Medical Officer for Glytech. So we're here at the Vive Conference. What'd you come to Vive for this year?
Yeah, great to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me on this podcast. Yeah, it's been exciting being in Nashville, first time at Vive. So at Glytech, we're a software as a medical device to sell to hospitals, and wanted to be part of the healthcare tech scene. I've heard some great things about the conference, ability to network with folks, catch up on the latest in healthcare tech, and I've been doing that the last 24 hours. It's been really great.
It's awesome. So tell me a little bit about Glytech. I know what Glytech does, but tell our listeners a little bit about more about what Glytech is, what it does, and the value it creates to better care for patients.
Yeah, I'll tell you a little bit about my medical history and that what brought me to Glytech, and that'll help illustrate what we do at Glytech. So I'm a hospitalist by training, was academic hospitalist, then went to a community hospital in 2005 to run the hospitalist program, and got really interested in quality improvement and patient safety at the time. One of my first projects was around diabetes, glycemic management in the hospital. And then it was also another project around diabetes. We would do some good work, sustain for a few months, and then it would go back to the mean. And then I was doing that kind of work in addition to locally, nationally with the Society of Hospital Medicine, was doing a variety of quality improvement projects. And then that work got me the attention of Glytech about 6 years ago. So really adding technology to help standardize diabetes care in the hospital. So our software, we sell to hospitals, health systems to help manage glycemia in the hospital better, and really understanding that to really improve care, really drive patient safety, you need the right people, you need the right processes, and trying to find the right spot where technology helps. And for me, that was, you know, coming to Glytech, we have our software called Glucomander to help manage insulin safely. That's really the main premise, is to we just don't do a great job of managing insulin, one of the high-risk medications in the hospital. So Glytech founded in 2006 to better manage IV insulin initially, and then we have a sub-Q insulin solution as well. We're an FDA-cleared company, software as a medical device, and really to try to make our patients safer and have tools for our clinicians, nurses, to manage these patients better in the hospital.
Yeah. I understand the value of Glucomander from a patient care and safety perspective, but it's unfortunate in today's healthcare system that we have to sell to CFOs and operational folks. So what is the operational and financial value of Glucomander?
As a hospitalist, you know, managing diabetes in the hospital, it's third, fourth on the problem list, and we just don't do a great job of managing it. We're paying attention to, you know, the main reasons patients are in the hospital, heart failure, pneumonia, and then often forget about the diabetes. So there's huge opportunity to improve the care of patients with diabetes or stress hyperglycemia in the hospital. And with Glucomander, when you standardize care with technology, use evidence-based solutions, we find that preventable hypoglycemia truly exists, and we lower severe preventable hypoglycemia by 90%, moderate by 50 to 70%, lower hyperglycemia. And we know just in general, when you improve glycemia, reduce high blood sugars, prevent low blood sugars, that patients have better clinical outcomes, as you're saying, that patient safety, then you realize the other outcomes as well. You reduce length of stay, reduce cost. Just controlling blood sugars better on a 3, 4, 5 day hospital stay reduces readmissions. So we talked to our CFOs about, we're taking care of patients, yeah, but we're also improving workflows for our clinicians, saving them time, ultimately for patients, reducing length of stay, reducing readmissions, and then showing some cost value. I mean, one preventable hypoglycemia could add $10,000 to $15,000 cost to a patient care in the hospital.
Yeah. So we're here at the Vive Conference, and big buzz is AI. And what are some of the innovative solutions you've seen over the last few days that were sort of new to you and, you know, are new use cases for AI?
Yeah, a lot of AI here at Vive. It's been great walking around Exhibit Hall and just seeing what different companies are up to. One of the areas that we're thinking about is how to improve the transparency of information in the EMR, and just seeing companies that are doing that here, recognizing, you know, there's a lot of outpatient, but on the inpatient side, where I'm interested in seeing some companies that, hey, really can leverage AI to read the chart differently. Well sheet that I saw using AI to really make that information more transparent, more usable, in a way that's more effective for clinicians and safer for patients. I mean, those are the things that we're thinking about at Glytech as well. How can we leverage glycemic information present that more clearly to the clinician. Maybe there's ways we can leverage AI to show that information more clearly in our niche, you know, glycemic care. But seeing that across the board, I've seen a few companies similar to that as well, really using AI to make that information more clearly, getting the right information, the right time, the right person. We know the technology we're seeing about whether it's ambient use or we're leveraging those conversations, particularly in the outpatient setting, but just leveraging AI to translate that inpatient information more clearly is exciting to see. A lot of opportunity there.
If you could wave a magic wand and say solve one issue in healthcare, whether that be operational or patient care, what would that issue be?
Oh, good old magic wand questions. I listen to a lot of Malcolm Gladwell podcasts. He's got the magic wand questions there. You must be listening to him as well. It's like, all right, wave the magic wand. I mean, certainly about patients. That's what we're in. You know, that's why I joined medicine, to take care of our patients. And I think you as an ER physician, me as a hospital medicine, really understand the operations in the hospital. But yeah, we see a lot of preventable errors, a lot of missing information, a lot of near misses, and we should be able to reduce that and keep our patients safer. You know, how could we make the experience for patients more meaningful? How could we make the time in the hospital safer? You know, a lot of family members talk about needing healthcare advocates, someone to just advocate for them in the hospital. You shouldn't need that, right? How can we make that experience for patients and the experience in the hospital safer? That's sort of broad, but that's certainly where I'd be thinking about a magic wand.
Awesome. Well, Jordan, thank you for joining me. I know you're busy with the conference, but appreciate you hopping on for a few minutes.
Yeah, this is great. Really appreciate it, Brian. Thanks.
Well, Rich, thanks for joining me on the Better Care podcast. So with me, I have Dr. Richard Loomis, Chief Informatics Officer for Elsevier. We are here at the VIVE conference, so appreciate you hopping on with us for a few minutes. So why'd you make it to VIVE this year?
There's a lot of buzz in the industry, obviously, right now with generative AI and wanting to get a pulse on the industry and meet up with friends like you, Brian, and our customers and partners.
Exhibit hall is kind of crazy. There's a lot going on. But any, you know, cool things that you've seen that kind of sparked your interest?
Yeah, actually, one of the things that's most striking to me in coming to VIVE this year is seeing the rapid pace of adoption of generative AI and technology. In my career in healthcare, I haven't seen a technology adopted so quickly across the industry, particularly on the provider side, but also in other segments. And what's really different, I think, about this new technology versus some of the others in the hype cycle that we've seen over the years is that this feels actually real. I'm seeing companies that are rapidly embracing generative AI and being successful at providing value to their customers. So Elsevier, where I work, we recently launched Clinical Key AI. And so that's a GPT-like interface into our trusted evidence-based content, helping healthcare professionals, physicians, nurses, pharmacists get to the answer as quickly as they can.
Yeah, and I think you highlighted a big point there. I was thinking while you were talking there was, I think why everybody's just going all in on AI is because it's all about, you know, making the user experience easier, getting them the information they need, and helping them make the right decisions for patients, which is what we're always trying to do in healthcare. So it's like, if we can help make that easier, then why wouldn't anybody be all in on that?
And not only does it have the potential to make the decisions easier, but it also, I see generative AI as having the potential to make the life easier of the healthcare professional. I've actually been writing an article series on the impact that generative AI will have in healthcare professional burnout, and whether it's administrative tasks like making decisions around admissions versus observations, or capturing a clinical visit and summarizing it in a note, to generating patient-specific educational materials on top of all of the other decision support use cases that you mentioned.
Yeah. Boy, I think back sometimes to my training days back at the University of Virginia. And when I was rotating in the ICU, if you got stuck doing the discharge summary on a patient from the ICU who'd been there for 3 months, and you had to get the 6 binders, and you had to basically sit there all day writing a 6-page discharge summary, and now, you know, the click of a button, you know, it's summarized and has all the pertinent elements of that patient's day. Boy, I would have loved that.
On the flip side of that, at the admission, I remember days as an intern in internal medicine, and you'd have the patient being transferred in and going through the mountain of charts, trying to figure out what's going on with this patient, what can I miss, and piecing that all together. And to your point, that all can happen in an instant.
Yeah, I know you've mentioned a little bit already, but you know, tell us more about what else of your, not only do you do today, but what you're building and what you're leaning in on AI to help bring about tomorrow.
Well, most people know Elsevier as a publisher of books and journals, and we have a 140-year-plus storied history of delivering trusted evidence-based content. More recently, we've been working to transform that content in delivering it into the clinical workflow in innovative ways that help drive better clinical decision-making, reduce variability, and improve outcomes, both clinical outcomes, operational, and financial outcomes. So that's been a core focus of us with the aim of helping healthcare professionals get to the right decision faster in their workflow. And then on the flip side of that, capturing the data needed to provide back and feedback into refining our content, as well as giving our customers and users insight into the care that's being delivered. A great example of that is our clinical path oncology solution, helping oncologists make the most appropriate treatment decisions for their patients based on unique characteristics like cancer stage, biomarkers, and so forth.
Yeah. Clinical path oncology has pretty much become the standard of care over the last few years.
Yeah, it really has. And unlike guidelines, for example, which may have several different options for a given patient presentation, we take the effort of narrowing down to one specific treatment recommendation based on efficacy, toxicity, and cost that really is in most cases right for a particular patient. We also use the opportunity of interacting with the user to identify where patients may be eligible for clinical trials. And so before presenting a standard of care recommendation, we're able to surface that there may be a clinical trial available for a patient and get them referred to a study coordinator.
As previously a publisher and now a digital health company, Elsevier, talk to me a little bit about the challenges of, you know, integrating into the EHRs and getting into the physician workflow. And, you know, how have you guys gone about kind of trying to solve that?
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Brian, when you said getting into the workflow. And that's really, from our standpoint, the most important way to add value for your customers and for your users. But it's also really tricky because you need to be getting into at the right points, having the right hooks, and working with some pretty complex technology on the other side. And so it's through those partnerships with electronic health record companies and other health tech companies in the industry, along with working very closely with customers. And it's not all only about the technology. Well, that's part of it, but equally, if not more important, is working with the clinical stakeholders and clinical leaders to understand what's unique about their workflows, how to integrate with maximum efficiency, what are their goals and objectives, and so forth.
All right, I'm going to finish up with a question I've asked everybody today. So if you could wave a magic wand, solve one operational or patient care issue in healthcare, where would you wave that wand?
I think misdiagnosis and undiagnosis is often an under-recognized challenge in healthcare. And we focus a lot on common chronic conditions, the big cost conditions, and sometimes focus less on using technology to ensure that we're making the right diagnosis, even if that diagnosis may change over time. And so I'm really optimistic and encouraged by what new technology will bring to bear in helping physicians and the care team get to the right diagnosis. And then once that diagnosis is made, ensuring that they're prescribing the right treatment.
That's great. Well, Rich, thank you for joining me today. I know you got a hectic schedule with the conference going on, but I appreciate you hopping on for a few minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Better Care Podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform.
Additionally, your ratings and reviews are invaluable in helping us reach a wider audience. Please consider leaving a review, and if you do, email us a screenshot at marketing@evidence.care, and we'll send you a thank you gift. For access to exclusive content and further healthcare insights created by Evidence Care, please visit evidence.care/bettercarepodcast and subscribe to our email list. We appreciate your support and look forward to connecting soon.